It's All Things Considered on WNYC. I'm Sean Carlson. While a nationwide red wave might not have materialized in Tuesday's midterm elections, it lapped at the shores of one of the bluest states in the nation, New York, here. On Long Island, for instance, the GOP flipped two of the island's four House seats, meaning that Long Island's entire congressional delegation is now made up of Republicans. So here to dissect this week's local results is former Long Island Congressman Steve Israel. He represented the North Shore from 2001 to 2017 and served 4 years as the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC. He's currently the director of the Institute of Politics and Global Affairs at Cornell University. Steve Israel, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
You spent pretty much your entire life on Long Island. You've been involved in politics there at the local and national level for more than 25 years. So can you give us some insight into how this red ripple that the rest of the country experienced translated into a wave on Long Island?
Yeah, this was a stunning surprise, a bit of a shocker in a midterm election where Democrats overperformed throughout the entire country and got shellacked on Long Island. And I think it was the result of a perfect storm, the convergence of bad luck in redistricting, a unique dynamic at the head of the ticket, and frankly, a serious disconnect that too many Democrats have with voters on anxieties regarding crime. And so you put those three things together in this unique constellation of circumstances, and you have the results that occurred.
Yeah. You mentioned crime, right? And Lee Zeldin really ran on that. But, you know, a lot of people associate crime as like a city issue, right? So why would that translate into success for Republicans on Long Island, which is so suburban?
There's no question that Republicans tried to run on law and order and crime throughout the rest of the country. And yet Democrats did better outside of Long Island, despite that Republican messaging. The so-called crime debate on Long Island, it was bookended by two problems: defund the police and cashless bail. And in my own travels on Long Island, I would talk to voters who would say, look, you Democrats, you want to let people out of jail. Now, let's put aside the fact that, you know, that rhetoric misrepresents the policy intentions of Democrats. Republicans did a very good job of amplifying those bookends, defund the police and cashless bail, in New York. And I think that that contributed to the lack of success that Democrats had. It wasn't the only issue, but it was an unmistakably powerful one.
You talked about there being a unique situation at the top of the ticket this year. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why it negatively impacted Democrats?
Yeah, this was a very unique situation. Kathy Hochul became governor. She wasn't elected governor. She stepped into the role when Andrew Cuomo resigned. She didn't have the time that most governors have to increase her recognition throughout the state, to get to know voters, to make voters comfortable with her. And then add to that that on Long Island, Lee Zeldin, he's kind of a hometown hero, even though I may disagree with him on issues. This is his media market. And so the numbers on Long Island, they were inflated for Republicans because Hochul wasn't as well known as other governors may have been, and Zeldin is rather well known here. But that, I think, raises a really interesting point. Anybody who believes that what happened on Long Island is a fundamental realignment of politics here misreads it. What happened on Election Day on Long Island was the result of this perfect storm and not a fundamental realignment of the moderate politics that is Long Island.
Hopping off Long Island for a moment, one of the biggest upsets this cycle was Hudson Valley Democrat Sean Patrick Maloney. He lost his race. He was also the head of the DCCC, which you headed from 2011 to 2015. So you have a lot of good perspective here when it comes to crafting strategy for the party as a whole. Can you talk more about what mistakes the party made and how it approached this year's campaign cycle?
You know, I was the chairman of the DCCC. I share that anxiety, that trauma that Sean Patrick Maloney had. Every gray hair on my head sprouted during the 4 years that I chaired DCCC. I don't want to second guess his strategies, his tactics. The fact of the matter is he had a very good cycle. Nobody would have predicted that the Democrats did as well as they did. The one thing that I'm sure he would like a do-over on would have been the redistricting maps in New York. And he didn't draw the maps, of course. It was done by Democrats in the state legislature. But the original maps that were submitted were very, very aggressive. That map really did cry out for relief, for judicial relief. And it's rather ironic that a Democratic court in New York is responsible for a Republican majority in the House of Representatives, because those maps made the districts much more competitive in New York. And in New York, it looks like the Democrats will have lost three seats, at least. Under the original maps, they would have gained three or four seats.
Can we talk more about inter-party politics here? Because you mentioned that bail reform and defund the police were issues that really were a lightning rod for voters on Long Island. But if you talk to progressive Democrats, they'd probably blame the state party for Tuesday's poor results. AOC, for example, told the New York Times that the state party organization practices are calcified machine-style politics, and many progressives are calling for the replacement of Andrew Cuomo ally Jay Jacobs as the party chair. How much of the blame lies with the state party, in your opinion, and do you think it needs new leadership?
You know, in the aftermath of difficult elections, we Democrats tend to turn our intuitions and our observations into tribal truths. So the left proclaims that we weren't far enough to the left, and the right insists that we were too far to the left. But emotions, particularly those that serve to reinforce our previously held beliefs, do not fix political failures. Long Island was a stunning failure for Democrats, but we need data and not drama. And so I strongly believe that before proclaiming what went wrong, we do the kind of postmortem that we owe our party and our voters.
Okay, so let's put your party strategist hat on then, right? It's 2024, mm-hmm. Elections on Long Island. How do Democrats reverse some of these Republican gains?
Completely different ballgame, in my view. And again, I would want to make the judgments based on some exit polls, based on some focus groups, and based on some data. However, Long Island is notoriously course correcting. And if you take a look at the results of every election since 2008, when Long Islanders believe that one party has gone too far in one direction, they put up guardrails, like on the Long Island Expressway, and nudge their leaders back to the center lane. Mm-hmm. And if the Republicans come to Washington, D.C. and govern like they did the last time they had the majority, that Tea Party Congress of 2010, and they shut down the government, and they're all about Marjorie Taylor Greene, and they are the party of chaos and crisis, and at the same time, if the economy improves over the next 2 years, that bodes very well for a Democratic presidency in 2024. And I will predict, even without the data, that Democrats will regain some of the seats that they lost on Long Island in 2024.
Steve Israel is a former congressman from Long Island. He's currently the director of Cornell University's Institute of Politics and Global Affairs. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.